Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
Talking.Golf is presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Have you heard the news? Wisconsin.Golf is now under the umbrella of the Wisconsin State Golf Association, and we're excited for a lot of new features coming in 2024. If you'd like to get behind Wisconsin.Golf and all we've got going, reach out to Rob Jansen at the WSGA at rob@wsga.org. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. It is the last week of January, believe it or not. And Gary D'Amato, just back from the PGA Merchandise Show. The golf season, I think, now can begin. I was watching Golf Channel today. It's kind of, you know, for a lot of people, the golf season might not begin until maybe the Players Championship for sure, you know, the Masters. But I tell you what, when you get that many people in one place, and we'll talk a lot about the show in a little bit, it just feels like everyone's ready for 2024 golf to begin.
Yeah, a ton of excitement, a huge buzz at the show this year, Rob, that I think has been lacking maybe, or not as big, certainly the last few years. You know, we made it through COVID, and the show was greatly reduced in size during those couple years. But equipment manufacturing and people jumping into the golf business is really back full steam. And it was good to see a show, that looked like it did, you know, 7-8 years ago. It was a good sign, I think, about golf's continuing boom, and it's only getting stronger. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
We'll talk about the PGA Merchandise Show. We'll also talk about what we're looking forward to in the month of February, because we've got competitive golf starting up again. On the professional level, we'll have both the Epson Tour, PGA Tour Champions resuming. But collegiately, we'll have a lot of college golf beginning as early as next week for a few schools, or at least golfers from Wisconsin. But we wanted to start first with a bit of sad news. We found out last week, actually Gary found out, at the show, because he was supposed to meet with Nikki Stricker and Bobby Stricker before one of the sessions down in Orlando, but they were on their way back to Wisconsin because Bob Stricker, the father of PGA Tour star Steve Stricker, passed away last week on Wednesday in Janesville. He was 86 years old, and Gary D'Amato, I think I speak for both of us, not just Steve's father, but a good friend to both of us, and a guy who, as a father, I think, is somebody that, you know, we can all pattern ourselves after, because he raised Steve along with, you know, Carolyn the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you know Steve, and you know, certainly if you know Bob, you know where Steve got his Midwestern values from, and his politeness, his demeanor, the way he treats people. It all comes from Bob and Carolyn, salt of the earth people, good people with good Midwestern values. I'll never forget the story Bob told me once, about when Steve entered the, I think at age 14 or 15, entered the, Ben Cresciuto Junior Masters. And, Steve was a couple down after two holes, and Bob said his dauber was down. He was moping around, and Bob went up to him and said, "Steve, if you're beat right now, let's walk back in the clubhouse. Shake this guy's hand. We'll walk back in the clubhouse. If not, why don't you, you know, get out there and start kicking some butt." And Steve had a huge rally, and Bob said he still lost the match. He was like, lost the match like one down, but it's that kind of lesson that a father imparts on a son, I think, that just, you know, carried Steve to, throughout his career. And, those kind of lessons that a father teaches their son or daughter that are valuable in life.
We're recording Talking.Golf here on a Monday, and actually at the same time that in Edgerton, funeral services are going on for Bob Stricker at the church there where he and Carolyn were married at Central Lutheran Church. They were married back in 1961, I believe it was, and it was so more than 60 years of marriage. You know, Bob and Carolyn almost inseparable, and you know, especially early on in Steve's career. You know, they would walk the fairways, you know, with us as we covered him. I can remember many Ray Fishers, where the entire family, in fact, a lot of Edgerton would come down to watch him in that. But I go back to when he won the Western Open, at Cog Hill back in 1996. And I remember that very well, Gary, because When I was working at the State Journal, I was, as we often did that time of year, we were up in the Dells on a vacation on Thursday and Friday. And I remember it was, I believe it was Friday. You know, Steve was kind of languishing there late in the round, and, Nikki was on the bag, and you could pull in WBBM on the radio. And Eric Brown, who used to work in TV in Madison, would do the updates on, you know, I think the 15 after and 15 till the hour. And, that was when, I guess the story goes, Nikki kind of kicked him in the butt and he finished like birdie, and, wound up, you know, getting within, you know, a shot or two of the lead, if not in the lead. And then I went down on Saturday and Sunday, and he wound up winning the tournament. And of course, you know, Bob and most of Edgerton was down there for that too. And that was, you know, for Steve, the ultimate home game, because as much as he loved, you know, the Greater Milwaukee Open, because he's from Wisconsin, you think about the Western Open halfway in between the University of Illinois, where he went to school, and Edgerton, where he grew up. That was, I think, one of the great moments for the Stricker family, because they were all there. And I know that I found a quote from Bob in the Chicago Tribune from, you know, that year. And they were just, you know, stoked beyond belief that they could watch Steve win so close to home.
Yeah, Rob, that's one of my great regrets, is that I missed that first victory by Steve. I was, that's the summer of the 96 Summer Olympics in Atlanta. And I was at the Journal Sentinel at the time and was the Olympics beat writer. And I remember I had to spend a good part of that summer gearing up for and then covering the Olympic Games. And so Dan Minoian, the late, great Dan Minoian, our friend who helped me cover golf back in those days, got to go down and cover Steve Zirkzee. And I really wish I could have been there for that.
I think Dan might have wished you could be there for that too, because I think there was one round where we had to approach Jerry Kelly, and it had been a great round. And Dan decided to throw his neck out there first, and it didn't go well. And I'm not sure what he asked. But you know, Dan, he never held back either. So Jerry had every right to kind of snap back. When those two went to, you know, got together, sometimes the exchanges were pretty funny. But it was also great to see. You know, there was so much written on Steve through the years. But, you know, you did a great piece before the Ryder Cup where you quoted Bob. I don't know if I ever quoted Bob Stricker in a story, you know, going back to, you know, when I first started covering Steve in 87 at the State Open down at Westmore. You know, Bob and Carolyn just kind of, you know, they always stayed to the side. They're very proud and, you know, and they had a lot, you know, they were, you know, they had a lot of opinions, but, you know, most of what we were writing at the time was Steve's rise and not so much looking back at where he had come from, because I think we were all in awe of how fast he got to where he was going, especially because it took him a couple of years to get there.
It did. And once he got there, he really became very good, very, very fast, won a couple of times in 96 and one in 2001. And then, you know, had the slump that's been well chronicled, and then came back from that and had a great rest of his career, and to this day still does. Yeah, Bob and Carolyn were quiet, reserved, I would say, and didn't seek the limelight, certainly. And Steve is much the same way.
Now, one of the other stories I found was written by the late Tim Rosefort for Golf Digest back in 2012 when Stricker won the Steve Stricker won the Payne Stewart Award. And Rossi quoted Dennis Tiziani about Steve's upbringing and said it was, quote, the little things. Eat over your plate, don't throw your clubs, and wash your hands. You know, if you had three words to live by, or three words of advice for your kid growing up in Edgerton, Wisconsin, that pretty much covers it, doesn't it?
That will take you a long way to adhere to those three golden rules, Rob, that's for sure. The other one is treat people the way you want to be treated. And I think Steve was, you know, carried on that from his parents. He's always been approachable, friendly, polite, rarely seen. Almost never see him go off the handle about anything. Inwardly, you know, he might have a problem with a person or people, but never lets on that he does. And those are all things that you get from your parents. So we can't say it enough, the job that Carolyn and Bob did raising Steve and Scott, the late Scott, Steve's older brother.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott was very much a part of that. I mean, there was one story written where, you know, Scott described what it was like to have the younger brother tag along for golf and how they would pick on him, you know, and Steve always held himself to such a high standard. And there was one quote, Scott said, to a reporter that, when, when Steve would, you know, not hit a shot the way or execute a shot the way he wanted to, he would joke, "Hang in there, Arnie, you'll get it next time," or something. You know, it was just like, you know, he would take that short swing, trying to hit it as long as his big brother and his friends, and it wouldn't always go that way. You know, Gary Van Sickle, speaking of, you know, Steve's temperament and it being a reflection of how, you know, kind of even keeled his dad always seemed to be. Gary Van Sickle, I think it was, quoted Andy North one time as saying that I think Andy might be the one guy that's ever seen Steve really blow up. I don't know when it was, but, you know, Andy described that, you know, there've been times where, you know, Steve will be running a little bit hot, but, you know, you remember Andy walked a lot of fairways with ESPN back when they had some of those, you know, telecasts and during Steve's prime. I'm sure there were some times when, you know, things didn't go well for Steve and he was running hot. I've only seen him running hot when there's been maybe an etiquette breach in a high school match and he goes, "Do they always do this?" You know, he'll get kind of upset about that. You know, he'd like to fix that. But it's just funny, some of the things that kind of get him, you know, a little bit irritated. But, it's been, one-tenth of 1% of the time that we've ever talked to him has he ever seemed agitated.
Yeah, and, you know, even if he has a horrible round or blows a lead or whatever, things go wrong in the golf course, you know, you talk to him 10 minutes later and he's as composed as can be. He'll answer any question. Never seen him snap at anybody, Rob. I really haven't. The angriest I've ever seen him is maybe when he mishits a shot or things are going badly and he'll kind of take a swipe at the grass of his golf club. Kind of an angry swipe. That's about it, though. That's about as angry as I've ever seen him. Inwardly, I'm sure he's ready to blow his top because we've all been there. And at the level he's playing at, you know, when you blow a lead or you don't win a tournament you think you should win or you hit a poor shot, I'm sure you get angry with yourself and I'm sure he has, but, you'd never know it. And especially afterward, you'd never know it. He's as even keel as can be, whether he shoots 62 or 78.
Yeah. And then, you know, one other thing about Bob, and I think I mentioned it, you know, here on talking.golf before was the fact that, you know, when I was at the state high school girls championship where Izzy, his granddaughter, repeated as state champion, it was the first time, you know, he mentioned to me the time that he said he played at the state tournament at Brown Deer Park and it had been a wet spring as it often is in high school boys golf and all the, you know, all those creek beds had overflowed and it was, you know, kind of, you know, like walking through a marsh. And so it sent me back to the, you know, to my record books here to see what, you know, what exactly he was talking about. But, and indeed, you know, he qualified for the state championship three times with Edgerton High School. You know, back in the days when they had one division, I don't know how they got, it was four man teams back then. And it looked as though they counted all four, scores. And, or at least that was published in the book. And, lo and behold, sure, he qualified three times. Todd Clark at WIA was able to send me some screenshots of scores he shot in the sectional to get to the state tournament. You know, back then, you know, scores in the, you know, upper 70s, low 80s for high school golf were really good. And I'd have to go back and look and see where he played the years before. I think Brown Deer Park might have been his sophomore year. He played at Lasonia, the Lynx course at Lasonia, as a senior. But, you know, and he was a member with the boys at, you know, Lake Ripley and at Edgerton Town as, Scott and Steve were growing up. So he was right there with them. I got to think that those tricker rounds, with, you know, Bob and his boys were probably some of the great memories he had of Steve on the golf course. But, as we, talk about, Bob and Steve, you know, we saw Steve have to withdraw, you know, at the Schwab Cup to be with Bob. I know no one likes to lose their dad. But I think 86 years old, he lived a great life. How do you think this will impact Steve here in 2024, Gary?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. You know, his dad had been in failing health for some time. I did see him at the state tournament watching Izzy play in the state high school championship, and he didn't look good to me. He had the same old Bobster smile, but he just didn't look like he was comfortable. And, you know, Steve told me that, you know, his dad was not doing well and probably was going to have to go into hospice. And so this was not a surprise or a shock. We knew it was coming. It's still hard and still sad, but who knows? This could, Steve could dedicate, his game or parts of his game or tournaments to his dad, and it could be a great motivator for him going forward, I think.
Steve said on X, our family is saddened by the passing of my dad. He was a great husband, father, brother, and grandfather. He not only taught me how to swing a golf club, but so many life lessons along the way. I owe him everything. He will be forever missed. Love you, Dad. And there was a picture of Bob Stricker with a, I guess it would be a navy, deep, dark navy shirt with orange lettering. I'm allergic to Green Bay. And that is a nod to the fact that Steve Stricker got his love for the Chicago Bears, which he broadcast at the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, from Bob Stricker. Yeah, they don't make them like Bob anymore, do they?
No, really, really fine man. Fun guy to be around. Fine golfer, you know, single-digit player in his prime, even though he had polio as a young kid. And he broke 80 regularly is what Steve told me. He was a pretty good player and, of course, taught his sons the etiquette of the game and how to comport yourself on the golf course, which is – more important than a score.
He said he didn't know if they taught him if he and Carolyn ever did anything special to raise Scott and Steve, but they tried to instill them to that, you know, people like it when you say hi to them, even if you don't know who they are. And can you imagine the number of times that Steve has had to apply that lesson, those words of advice as a member of the PGA Tour? As I mean, he's so likable, and I mean, he gets. You know, I mean, look at the reaction we got, you know, we've gotten on, you know, the Facebook posts for Bob and everything that we've written recently, especially of Steve Stricker. My goodness, it just, you know, everyone really kind of has an attachment to Steve because I think we can all relate to him.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Rob. He's very relatable. Whole family's very relatable. They were blue cast, it's a blue, you know,
blue collar, yeah.
Yeah, blue collar. Thanks. Couldn't think of the word, but blue collar for me from a small town and raise their kids the right way. And I think we all relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bob Stricker is in our thoughts as Steve Stricker and his family and Carolyn are in our thoughts and prayers as they remember Bob today at Central Lutheran Church in Edgerton. And one of the great joys of covering golf in Wisconsin is not only the golfers we cover, but the families around them. And Bob certainly embodied that. As we continue here on Talking.Golf, reminder, we're brought to you by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. A lot of great things happening as we venture forward in our new era here at Wisconsin.Golf with the cooperation and the leadership of Rob Jansen and the staff over at the WSGA. There's a lot you can do to get behind what we do here at the Wisconsin.Golf. And if you're interested in being a sponsor, being a partner, in some of the things that are going on, we feel free to have you or your company reach out to Rob at rob@wsga.org. Gary D'Amato, fresh back from the PGA merchandise show and now being tasked with one final story. We'll review some of the things you wrote from last week, Gary, but you've got to write the 10 best things that you saw at the PGA merchandise show. And as we set up the podcast today, I told you, we'd kind of, you know, we're not going to spoiler alert anything that you're writing for. I believe it's going to post later tomorrow. Let's talk about what goes into compiling something like that. Do you look at, you know, what booth had the longest line? Do you what touches you in a way that says this is one of the top 10 things I saw at the merchandise show?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Rob. Just kind of wandering the aisle. And sometimes things just caught my eye. It was something unusual, and I'd stop and talk to the either the inventor or the marketing person or whoever was manning the booth. And some things that I saw were unusual, some things that I saw that maybe are training aids that can help golfers. And then there's just so much new equipment. I mean, you can wade up and down those aisles to write about almost anything that you see equipment-wise because it's all new. A lot of it is, you know, first-year issues by the major manufacturers. And so I just picked out a couple things that really caught my eye from the equipment side and included a couple training aids and a couple maybe offbeat-type things that people might not know about that, that you know, caught my eye and I think are interesting at a reasonable price point.
I followed you on X and as well as Chuck Garbedian and Gary Van Sickle. You guys were posting a lot of cool pictures of booths and equipment and apparel. And I'm going to start with the last thing you, the last piece of apparel that you posted on the final day of the show, because I've never seen it. And I wonder how it would fly at any club with a dress code policy, because technically you adhere to it, but I'm not sure a tie-dyed golf polo would go over well at Augusta National. What did you think of that, Booth? And what are we talking about here with these shirts made by quote unquote real hippies?
Well, yeah, it was a very, very bright display, as you can imagine, Rob, that caught my eye at the end of one of the aisles. I didn't see it the first day. I might not have seen it till the last day, now that you mention it, because of, you know, so many booths and so many things to see. I probably missed it the first day or two, but definitely what has caught my eye, and the sign made by real hippies also was, I thought, a kind of interesting. There was a young man with shoulder length blonde hair in there, and I would guess him to be the real hippie. And you see tie dye t-shirts certainly everywhere. It's not often you see a tie dye golf polo, but you know, if it's got a collar on it, how can you be kicked out of off a course if it's got a collar on it, right? You're adhering to the dress code of most places.
It looked like the perfect polo to be wearing for twilight golf, because I think it would stay lit long after the sunset. So I think that was a great product. You teased last week, Gary, you anticipated there being a lot of putter companies. You wrote about one that received a gold medal award, and then you tweeted about another that had some rather bold marketing on the final day of the show. You ran into it looks like the Bel Air putter. Why does your putter have to have a flat face, or why does your putter have a flat face and a tiny sweet spot? And the answer at the bottom of the banner was no effing reason. So that was bold. It does look like a rather large sweet spot. Do we need a large sweet spot for the putter, Gary? Because I have to think that the putter and the golf ball and the contact that it makes and the path that it takes, you know, there shouldn't be a large margin for error, because it's the most exact shot you've got to execute to get the ball in the hole.
It's really fun, Rob. You know, a lot of the putter companies are trying to expand the sweet spot and have it go from toe to heel, so that if you hit one off the toe or you hit one off the heel, the ball still goes fairly straight toward your target, which I don't know. You have to be a pretty bad putter to hit it off the toe unless you're doing it intentionally. I mean, you can miss the sweet spot on a putter, but you shouldn't miss it by an inch and a half. But then I found one company, Rob, that put all the weight in this putter in a little one-inch space for middle, right in the sweet spot. And that one, if you did hit it off the whole tee or the heel, it didn't give good results. But the guy's premise was that most people hit it reasonably in the center, and so he put the mask right behind the sweet spot. So there's all kinds of philosophy putting and putting manufacturers. You see everything from steam shovels on these giant heads on putters down to the old, what I learned to putt with, the old bullseye putter, and everything in between. But more and more technology these days in putting. Talked to one guy who said, you know, there's too much technology. We become rope with putting instead of going by feel, like Lee Trevino or some of the great putters Tom years gone by. But I think there's a point of diminishing return with technology, but certainly some of it is very useful if you want to become a better putter.
And before we stop talking about putters, I mean, we have to give a nod and a shout out to Ryan Duffy, the owner of Meridian Putters, and you know, a Brookfield company that they were the company that won the Golf Digest gold medal, or were on the hot list, I guess I should say. They earned a gold medal in the Golf Digest 2024 hot list. I mean, Gary, can you explain to our listeners what that means and how big a deal is that for a Wisconsin-based putting company?
Huge. That hot list is, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a Bible, but it's very, very influential with consumers, you know, who read Golf Digest and rely on that hot list to know what the best equipment is out there. And to make that hot list for blade putters, which Meridian did, joined by 10 other putters, and when you think of how many putters and how many models are out there, being named one of the 11 best blade putters being made today is quite an accomplishment. And I think Ryan expects to see, and he already has seen, he told me, a uptick in business, because people who read that, and it just came out the Tuesday of the show, so it was brand new information, but people find out in a hurry, especially at the show, and I know he had a lot of people gravitate to his booth to see what Meridian putters were all about.
Well, especially because he only made his debut at the show last year, and so it's clearly caught on quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. And the best thing about it is they're milled putters out of stainless steel. So they're very, very high quality putters and putters, just like a Bettinardi or a Scotty Cameron or an Odyssey or Shantula. You name some of these right. putter companies that produce really high end fine putters. But the difference is the Meridian putters come in at a very much lower price point, about $230 to $240 for Meridian putters compared with $300, $400, $500 for some of the other name brands. So you're getting a great putter at roughly, 40%, 50%, 60% of what you would pay for a Scott Cameron or a Bettinardi. So I think Ryan Duffy's going to do very well because he makes very, very good putters.
And then, Gary, it was hard for you to walk 10 feet without seeing someone from Wisconsin. You tweeted out a lot of pictures of people who look familiar to me. You actually texted me the first one of Steven and Danny Sinicki, and then you saw him again the next day. And they were wearing the Boston Bruins hockey jersey a la Happy Gilmore. And you know what? They looked a lot like Happy Gilmore. I have to say, I had to look close to make sure that you weren't – that wasn't Adam Sandler next to you.
Yeah, those guys had a lot of fun. You know, they wanted to come to the show, didn't have a way. And you have to be either a member of the media, a PGA professional, or have a booth, you know, be an exhibitor at the show to get in the show. The public – can't wow. get in the show. So they were trying to figure out an angle to get in, and they talked to our friends at Caliber Golf, who makes the hockey stick putters, the right players, Tim and Chip, and said, hey, how about if we do some social media stuff for you guys and wrap your product a little bit and you get us in the show? And the rights said, yeah, that's a deal. So the Sinickies were in there because of Caliber Golf, but then they did a lot of, they walked around and met a lot of other companies that they want to work with. And so I think they had big smiles on their face, Rob. They were geeked out at all the equipment.
And then I had to smile because you ran into Nick Gilliam, the Green Bay native who won an NCAA championship at Florida back in 2001. Nick Gilliam is the subject of one of my great stories ever from covering the Wisconsin PGA Junior Championship way back in the days at the State Journal, early in the WPGA Junior had been around forever, but it was really starting to gain traction. There were over 400 kids at Yarra Hills. And Tony Coleman, the late executive director of the WPGA, suggested that maybe I'd want to talk to this little kid from Green Bay. He must have been 13 or 14 who shot 85. I go, Tony, why would I want to talk to a kid who shot 85? We get all these kids out here shooting 68, 69. You know, I mean, he goes, well, this kid is, I think he's an up-and-comer. And you know, he was only 12 or 13 at the time. So, he was playing up to be able to play in that. And, sure enough, it wasn't long after that that Nick Gilliam made a name for himself and then went off to college and wins an NCAA championship. He always has a smile on his face, and he certainly did in your selfie. What's Nick up to these days?
Yeah, it was fun running into Nick. And I'll tell you, Rob, if you look at that photo, he looks the same as he did 10 years ago to me. I mean, instantly recognizable. Yeah, he hasn't changed at all. He's a special events manager for AHEAD, the hat and equipment and apparel manufacturer. So he explained that he goes to tournaments and sets up tents and, you know, represents AHEAD at a lot of outings and tournaments around the country. So I think he's traveling a lot. He said he has two daughters. I think he said ages 9 and 2. And he's loving life, playing a little bit of golf and playing, you know, customer golf and really enjoying his job. He's been on that job about, you know.
Yeah, and again, youthful as ever. And you also ran into Sherry Steinhauer doing her pickleball deal at the show again. You know, golf and pickleball certainly go hand in hand. I know that because it's equally popular as golf down here at Pebble Creek. In fact, one of the largest pickleball communities in the country. Sherry sometimes makes a stop here in February. So you ran into her, but she is planning her second comeback from a long hiatus. Now, she tried to come back last year, and if you blinked, you missed it. She played one tournament, the PGA Senior LPGA Championship, and then she could tell her hip wasn't right, so she actually had a hip replacement. She seems too young for that, Gary.
I know. You know, she's had her hip problems are really what drove her from the LPGA Tour 11, 12 years ago, Rob. So she's had ongoing hip problems. And I said, you play pickleball if you've got these hip problems. And she said, it's totally different. You know, the twisting and turning, the torquing of your hips in golf, she said, is way harder on my hips than pickleball, where you're making bigger lateral movements, I guess, and you're not really running around like crazy on a pickleball court. But yeah, she had her hip replaced, left hip replaced July 5th of last year, and has been doing a lot of rehab and getting ready. She wants to enter pretty much for senior on the women's side, a full slate of tournaments. She wants to play in the senior LPGA, which she last year, as you pointed out. She would love to play in the U.S. Senior Women's Open and however many legends events that the LPGA has, said she'll try to play in all of them. So she's going to try to be a two-sport athlete in her 50s. Is she 60 yet, Rob? I'm trying to think how old Sherry is. She might be.
Yeah, she might be. Let me just Google that one because I never think of her as that old, but then I realize I know. I'll be 58 soon. So 61 years old. So yeah, she is, okay. So what does that qualifier for? Super senior. I'd like to see her come back play in the state women's open. That would be a hoot, you know, play with a lot of these kids who, you know, come up, grown up playing in her tournament, the Sherry Steinhauer Junior Girls, championship over at, it's been at Blackhawk last year. They played around at her old home course at Nakoma, but, that'd be a lot of fun. It's just nice to see her playing golf again. I know that when I ran into her last year here at that pickleball event, she mentioned that she was getting, like you mentioned, fitted for those clubs at Ping so she could go play with her brothers over in Palm Springs, you know, while they were out on spring break. And, you know, that's kind of where she got a lot of her competitive, you know, fire early in her career, you know, competing against her brothers and then, you know, playing against some of the greats back in the 70s, in the early 80s in Wisconsin. But yeah, it was that's neat to see. Also, you know, on the topic of apparel and items. Now, you didn't tweet out as many head cover pictures as your buddies Chuck and Gary, Gary Van Sickle especially. There were a lot of great head covers. A couple of Augusta type themed ones. The ones that I liked were the Scotty Cameron putter covers. Some that looked like pumpkins, some with dice on it. You know, anything you could possibly want on a putter cover. The head cover game has gone to a whole new level, I think, here in the 2020s.
And you know, head covers now, Rob. You can spend as much money on a single head cover as you spent on an entire set of golf clubs 30 years ago. Those head covers, some of those left fancy Cameron head covers, $300-$400 for a head cover. I mean, I can put it on a club and throw it in my trunk. I'd be too afraid to ruin it. I'd have to hang it on the wall as art or something. But, you know, it's funny you mention that because I had to get on my Twitter/X game because Gary and Chuck were teasing me a little bit that they were posting more stuff that was being on our site than I was. So I had to up my game.
Well, I did compile yours the first day, and then the Bob Stricker story broke, and I kind of got pulled away. And but I was so into what you guys were doing; it was like I was there. And I loved it. You remember back? I think the one Golf Writers Championship that we played together, you know, they had like raffle prizes or some sort of prize. Remember, I won the Three Stooges head covers. Do you remember that? And
I do remember that. Yeah.
You push on their fingers and they say, you know, something like they'd say on the TV. I still have those, Gary, and I don't use them because sit up in the equipment closet where all my other stuff is. Next week I'll bring one of the Three Stooges head covers in for the podcast, and I can play a low Mo Curley or Larry. And then
collector's items, definitely.
Did you tweet out divot repair tools? Have also that you tweeted out a picture of like three that had some sort of image of, I didn't recognize who was on them, but I'm guessing now that you might be able to have I remember Jason Wilde, who wrote Cover the Green Bay Packers when I was working at the State Journal, when he got married, big reception down at the Pfister, and he gave everybody a bobblehead. And back then you could make bobbleheads in your own likeness. So it was, you know, Paula and Jason, it was their wedding bobblehead. I thought, boy, that's cool. I'm thinking now if I'm getting married in the 2020s here, I'm thinking I'm giving my groomsmen all divot repair tools with my face on them. How would that look?
That would be, I wouldn't say scary, Rob. I wouldn't go that far. But But yeah, that guy, I know the guy you're talking about, his little company called, Putt Buddies, and he makes these ceramic divot, tool/ball markers that in the likeness of, you know, famous people, like he had, Darth Mikkelsen. So Phil Mikkelsen would look like Darth Vader, but the ball marker part actually detaches and it was Darth Vader's mask. You take it off and it's Phil Mickelson's face underneath. And he had some really crazy ideas with this. He had like, Mini-Me, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. He had Tiger Woods in a, like a Spider-Man mask. And then you take a little piece off of them becomes the ball marker. It's hard to explain, but that's one of the, little spoiler here, spoiler alert. That's going to be one of my 10 things that okay. I saw at the show that I thought were cool. Yeah.
It caught my eye when you tweeted it out. So that I'm glad you did. And last but not least, and I'm not sure if this made the list because I would have to think that I don't know where you would use this. And I don't know if this is a golf cart, but it's significant because you, Chuck and Gary all tweeted pictures of it. It is the Navitas VS or whatever mega golf cart. And I think one of you said cart path only on this one. But I mean, it looks like a monster truck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who's going to use that on a golf course because, yeah, the wheels are, you know, 4 feet tall and the golf part, the cart that you sit in is like 6 feet, 7 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
I don't know who the heck would use that thing, but it would be scary to see that thing rumbling down the fairway.
Well, and I one of my softball teammates mentioned, you know, we were looking at, you know, everyone takes golf carts to the softball field. And I noticed that his kind of, you know, had his sat up higher than mine did. And he said that the model of golf car that he bought, he actually had the first tires, he had to remove them and downsize because our course wouldn't let tires that, you know, that wide in circumference onto the golf course because it can do damage. And I mean, and we're already in that debate now as we come, you know, as we distance ourselves from COVID, at what point are we going to go back to two carts per group? We're still at four carts per group if we choose to, but you can see the wear and tear on the edges of the, you know, where the grass meets the cart path. And, you know, and I also mentioned, and our course, there was the USGA tweeted out, our East course, was number two in the country last year, Gary, in, number of rounds recorded in gin. Number one ahead of, Torrey Pines North. And that was number.
Are you kidding me?
Number of rounds.
Course.
Yeah. My daughter, you know, kind of tagged me in that post and I was, you know, and I, it didn't really dawn on me that, you know, we do push through a lot of rounds here. And, you know, I didn't realize the USGA tracks how many, you know, we often talk about how many rounds were played in the course of a given year. And this particular post had to do with the number of rounds posted for handicap purposes, not total rounds played. And the top five courses were the East course at Tuscany Falls here in Pebble Creek. Number two was the North course at Torrey Pines. We had, by the way, 36,744 rounds recorded in gin, of which probably 50 were mine. And then Torrey Pines was two. Bell Fair Golf Club in Bluffton, South Carolina had over 27,000. Shadowwood in Bonita Springs, Florida. And then the Vineyards Country Club in Naples, over 24,000. I've never seen that stat before, Gary.
I never had either, Robert. Everyone at your club must have a gin handicap, right? Everybody. I mean,
a lot of people do because a lot of people
join.
We've got 9 and 18 hole leagues for men and women, and it's seeming. And then we've got a bunch of other, you know, smaller groups that play, and a lot of them like to use the Golf Genius, and a lot of them want, you know, they won't let people into their group if they don't have a handicap because they don't want any sandbaggers, and even for the dollar or two that they might play for. So, but and again, the reason I bring that up is because you know. Obviously, a cart the size of which you tweeted, you know, that might not make it that, you know, that might be a county fair type vehicle. But, you know, even the four versus two cart thing is starting to become an issue. And as we, you know, continue down the road about water conservation, I think that'll really be something where we might see another you know, circle of life thing back to the caddy, you know, era where, you know, we'll see fewer carts and more caddies on courses simply because we want to conserve the turf grass.
That's a good point. I mean, a lot of courses right now are moving back toward caddies. Not only private clubs, but a lot of public courses now are starting to employ caddies. And of course, some of the resorts like Sand Valley and Black Wolf Run have, and Erin Hills have big caddy programs. So yeah. The other thing is I would love to go through the villages and see how many carts are, yes, you know, souped up in the villages. That would be fun to see a parade of carts in a place like that.
Well, if they wouldn't have so many courses, they would have easily made, you know, swept the top five, because I can only imagine how much golf is played there, you know, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
I mean, we're full, but it, from essentially October, through, you know, March and into April. But that place is, I mean, that's a megaplex. That is the Disney World of senior living. And, they've got the number of golf courses to prove it. Well, Gary, so I take it you had a fun time. But is it going to be a chore to whittle down? Are you going to whittle down to 10 or are you going to build up to 10?
Got to whittle down, Rob, because I started out with about 15 or 20 that I just want these things to be interesting that people maybe have heard of or, but don't know a lot about. That's sort of what I'm looking for. There are a couple off the wall things in my top 10 that nobody will have seen or known about. So, I had 15 or 20 that I originally wanted to include and did a lot of interviewing and a lot of time spent in booths. But it's going to be fun to whittle it down to 10. I pretty much know what they are now, Rob. I better, because I got to write in the next 24 hours.
That's right. That's right. Well, we've got, you know, a couple, what, matter of hours left in the month of January. Then February hits us, and we'll start seeing the PGA Tour champions back in action. Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly, will be joined by Mario Tiziani, we think, at the Chubb Classic in Naples, coming up here in just a couple weeks. That's next on the list. But I guess they don't actually start in February, but March, the Epson Tour. Emily Lauterbach, has status on that tour, and potentially, Bobby Stricker, Mackenzie Hahn, and, Tatum Beck, who all played at the, LPGA Q School last year. We expect them to play more on maybe the tour down in Texas. College golf, Gary, is going to start very, very soon. And I was going through looking, for, you know, golfers who might be coming this way. You know, Marquette won't be out here this year. They were at Palm Valley Golf Course in Goodyear last year, but Ty Kretz in South Dakota State, and then, Max Schmidtke, and Parker Etzel of, South Dakota will be out there for that tournament. Marquette actually, Gary, will be at, I don't know if they're going to be, I think they're going to beat you to Augusta National though. They're going to be at the Augusta, Collegiate, at, one of the other courses in town the week before the Masters. It's one that is always on the schedule at that point, as will Illinois and potentially Pearson Hunt. How early are you getting down there for that thing? Are you going to be able to catch the Golden Eagles, who were honored, by the way, as Big East champions at, this weekend's, Saturday's Marquette basketball game I saw, and in addition, yeah, Doc Rivers, who was introduced, since he's going to, I guess, start a new job in Milwaukee somewhere.
Yeah, so with some team in Milwaukee, he'll be with, yeah, starting tonight. As we record this podcast.
Yes,
on a Monday. Yeah, yeah. What was your question originally?
The Augusta Haskins invite is at Forest Hills Golf Club on April 6th and 7th. I'm guessing that you won't be down there quite that early.
I always get down there on the Sunday before the Masters starts, because I have a board meeting with the GWA on Monday morning. So if they're there on Saturday and Sunday, I mean, if they're there on I could potentially get down a day early and maybe cover that tournament, as long as I'm going to be there, cover the end of it.
I mean, based on what we saw this fall, Marquette, you know, men might be the most solid thing in terms of, you know, going a deep way into the tournament. I mean, I'd be shocked if they didn't defend the Big East title. They just looked really, you know, they had great competition within the lineup, and then they also had, great performances at the top of the lineup. I feel like that Steve Bailey's kind of got one of those teams, Gary, that, could do some damage deep into May.
Yeah, it sounds like he signed a couple really good freshmen too that are coming and maybe help the program immediately. But he's got some, he's got a season team. They've been through the ringer. They won the Big East. They could make some noise this spring. You're right, Rob.
Looks as though, you know, the Badger men we knew were kind of in a rebuilding mode after a great breakthrough season last year as, Mike Wilson kind of, I think maybe goes from the transfer portal approach to filling in gaps to now, with, you know, a couple of good recruiting classes of his own, you know, kind of building the program that he envisions for the long haul. The Badger women aren't that bad, but they've also got good talent coming in this fall with, Izzy Stricker and, Lauren Salmon out of California. On the heels of Kate Brody, who has, you know, really played solid last fall, and then the Green Bay, you know, women, you know, won the Horizon League last year. They, you know, lost a lot of senior talent from there, but had moments this fall. It's this time of year, it's kind of hard to tell how things are going to develop. We got a lot of teams on training trips right now. We got a lot of teams that may not start competing like Green Bay until. Into, you know, later March, and then they're pretty solid through the month of April before their conference championships. As you look at college golf, Gary, you know, what do you look at in terms of maybe one or two things to watch here as we get into that college season?
Yeah, I a couple of seniors, Rob, that we've talked quite a bit about and maybe touched on earlier in this podcast, especially with Pearson Hunt, who I believe is coming your way for a tournament, right?
The Patriot
All-American. Pearson is a senior at Illinois, and then Cameron Huss, a senior at Wisconsin. Cameron has had great summers the last couple summers, especially this past summer where he just about swept, the three major tournaments in Wisconsin, winning the Fisher in dramatic fashion, winning the State Open, and finishing second to Jack Phelps in the State Am. But I don't think Cameron has played – during the college season, quite up to the standards that he has in summer seasons. So I'm interested to see how both those guys finish off their collegiate careers here.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, because I think even last year when they surprised everybody, the Badgers I'm talking about at the Big Ten Championship, it wasn't like they had performed at an extremely high level throughout the season. They had shown promise.
Yeah.
They took that promise, and they got it to really, gel at the end of the year. Again, you're talking about, you know, Cameron Huss at Wisconsin, Pearson Hunt at Illinois. I'm not sure that, who we're all talking about at Marquette that might be, on the way to that next level. But, there's a lot to play for going into the spring season, versus coming off of a busy summer like a lot of these guys did in the fall. I guess the what I'm trying to say, Gary, is maybe we shouldn't look too much into the results of the fall because, you know, the spring is where all the bread is buttered.
Yeah, absolutely. You're trying to win your conference championship and get an NCAA berth. There's much more pressure and much more big things to play for, certainly in the spring, than there are in the fall season.
And then also on Monday, coming out my way, is Thomas Longbella. It'll be the Monday qualifier for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He does not have to go through the pre-qualifying. There's a number of Wisconsin golfers who are in the pre-qualifier series here. I mean, I think I got to go to the Monday Q Info Twitter account, but because he quoted the number of golfers, it'll be 624 golfers at 8 pre-qualifiers, probably for 2 or 3 spots at each, just to get into the Monday qualifier. And
crazy.
Because Thomas Longbella got to the final stage of PGA Tour Q School, he gets to go right to Monday. Today, Thomas Longbella is one of the 3 Wisconsin golfers competing, actually 4 with Wisconsin ties, competing in open qualifying for the upcoming Argentina Open on the Corn Ferry Tour. And Thomas shot a 200 par 70, 2 qualifiers from each of the 2 sites, and right now, there's 4 golfers at 67. Griffin Barella, a 74. George Kneiser, a 75. Will not make it either. And then at the other course that's hosting the qualifier, Sam Anderson with the last tee time of the day, so he's not in. He's going to have to shoot 68 to get into a 5-for-2 playoff or better to get into the tournament. We're seeing now that the Monday qualifiers start to become a bit of a thing for some of our mini tour guys. not all of them are going that route. You know, it is like playing the lottery, as you know, Gary. A lot of them are going to, you know, maybe pick their spots and continue to find places to play so that they're ready at the end of the year for qualifying school again. But, you know, Thomas Longbella can take it low. Wouldn't it be fun to see him at the TPC Scottsdale and the circus that is the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Yeah, I have a feeling Thomas is going to get in some big events this year. He certainly, you know, has shown that he can type of scores and that it takes some qualifiers to get through. So, depending, you know, where he enters, which tournaments and how many, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get in a couple Korn Ferry and PGA Tour events.
And last but not least, Gary, the other thing that's going on in the month of February, and you kind of have to, you know, drill into our site here. If you go down to the latest tournament results on our main page, you'll see a little link there to the calendar. One thing that's dominating the calendar here in the next few weeks are golf shows. And starting with this weekend down in Tinley Park, Illinois, it was one that Jim Kelch and I used to go to when I first started at Wisconsin.golf. The 2024 Tinley Park Golf Show will be at the Tinley Park Convention Center Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then next week, I think it's one of two really big weekends for golf shows. There's the West Michigan Golf Show over in Grand Rapids and the Minnesota Golf Show up at the Minneapolis Convention Center, as well as the Fox Cities Golf Show at Sunnyview Expo Center in Oshkosh. And then the 23rd and 24th and 25th is the big Chicago Golf Show down in the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. But Gary D'Amato, the Greater Milwaukee Golf Show is on the move this year, and it'll be March 1, 2, and 3, and it's got a new home.
It does, Rob. Ballpark Commons in Franklin. The show's going to be split between the Lux Golf Base, which I know a lot of people are familiar with, the Top Golf-like sort of entertainment golf entertainment center, and then the Mosh Performance Center, Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital Performance Center, which is a huge indoor. I mean, there's a football field inside there. So there's plenty of space for exhibitors and vendors. And I think it's going to go well, Rob. You know, State Fair Park, I think a little bit had lost its luster with the crowd, and especially with vendors. And I think this is going to be, I think Jay Royal did a good thing by moving the show. Golfers are going to have, who pay, for the show, get access to the third floor of Lux, where there will be lessons and equipment testing, but also some open hitting bays where you can bring your own clubs. And as long as you pay to come into the show, you can go up there and hit balls at Lux, which I think is going to be a treat for some people. It looks like he's back up to, you know, 65, 70 vendors after it had been down for a couple of years. And I think it's going to infuse the show with some excitement that maybe has been lacking the last few years.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, but I believe they kind of folded the Madison show into the Milwaukee show, and it's going to be one big Jay Royal golf show. I mean, I don't think the Madison show is on this year.
Yeah, I don't know. Last year they haven't announced yet what they're going to do with Madison, Rob. Last year it was at Lake Wisconsin Country Club. Remember that? They went outdoors in the middle of summer and did it.
Yep.
I don't know if for sure if they're going back to that or not.
They are August 28th, a Friday, and Saturday, August 24th at Lake Windsor. Free parking and a midsummer golf show is kind of the route they're going with that. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. Kind of at the end of the year, maybe there'll be some, you know, maybe that'll be the, you know, there could be a niche there. It might be the first place that you see some of the courses that, you know, choose to attend start to, you know, maybe unload some merchandise with some good deals. So that's an innovative way to do it. I think, you know, focusing this time of year on this, you know, Lux Golf Bays area down in Franklin, which, you know, has really become a great destination in the wintertime. But, you know, there's so many. I'm going through the golf course listings for our Wisconsin.golf yearbook, which will be hitting the presses here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, as I call up the names of, you know, all these courses that we just want to make sure are still active and make sure we've got the right websites and all this. When I call up their websites, it seems like everybody's got a simulator now, Gary. And so either you can hit balls inside to the outdoors like you can at Lux, or you can hit them into a screen just about everywhere in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, you know, that used to be a novelty, and now it's kind of the norm in the wintertime at some of these courses.
It is, Rob. You know, I've been seeing some statistics that there's actually more off-course golfers last year in 2023. More people played simulator golf and in places like Top Golf and Lux Golf Bays than played actually green grass golf for the first time ever. It had been, you know, simulator golf golf had been overtaking greengrass golf in recent years and finally surpassed it last year. So there's actually more people playing simulator golf than on golf courses, Rob.
You just used a phrase that I heard for the first time today from Rob Jansen, greengrass golf. And we now have to differentiate between greengrass golf and the stuff we're doing right now when the grass isn't green. And the other thing I heard, because we got to, as we're doing our listings, you know, I think I knew it anecdotally, but it didn't really hit me. But let me see here. The number of changes or a couple of courses that have closed, but especially in the Milwaukee County Park system. And I guess it's kind of like, and this isn't breaking news, but Doane Park closed now after the 22 season, so they didn't open last year. And then Madison Park has been redeveloped into a disc golf course, and on their website they say that the disc golf course is on the site of the former Old Ball golf course. It's
Old Ball
golf course, Gary, as opposed to
that's
a new
interesting, Rob. Yeah, you know how to use the term greengrass golf, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Now you have to differentiate between greengrass golf and, I don't know, fake golf. I guess it's pretty close to being real, but it's still fake.
Yeah. So anyway, we are in a new era, and that's why it's exciting to be part of the WSGA, because they're usually the first to know about courses that are either leaving the membership or closing altogether. And sometimes, if you're not paying close attention, you know, you might miss a couple of these. You know, the other ones, St. John's Northwestern Golf Course closed. I think they're subdividing that down there at the Academy in Delafield. And, of course, Caitlin Moyer mentioned South Hills Country Club down in Franksville. There's a reason they were selling those ball washers, because that course is now being redeveloped into a business park. And so it is interesting to see the evolution of golf in Wisconsin. And speaking of Caitlin, she's got a great story up on her site right now. Former WSGA intern Tia Martin is traveling the world with the LPGA. I found it great, you know, I've been able to, you know, write about golf in Wisconsin from Arizona. She's writing about the LPGA tour, sometimes from her apartment in Milwaukee, and then if they need her on the road, then she just kind of flies out of Billy Mitchell and goes to Japan or wherever the LPGA might be. And she's done some great stuff. Caitlin talked to her, and we've got some of her work linked and highlighted in there. So I encourage you to check that out. And of course, you know, to put a bow on our talking.golf for today, you didn't just write about the Meridian base or the Meridian putter. You're not only writing about the top 10 things, but Gary D'Amato gained 20 yards off the tee in 5 minutes down at the golf show. He's a new and improved Gary D'Amato with the Perfect Hands trainer. Gary, you're never going to get your hands too high or too low ever again on the takeaway.
Well, you know, I bought one on the spot. That's how much I believed in it. And I hope it wasn't just fluke thing that after working with this Perfect Hands trainer for just 10 minutes, I suddenly was hitting the ball longer, because I really was. But I hope it wasn't one of those, a fluke. Like, you know, sometimes you discover something in your swing and you say, aha, I've got the answer. And, two rounds, you're searching again. So I hope that wasn't the case with Perfect Hands, but, I certainly seem to benefit from that training, short training session. And I hope that if I use it religiously now over the next couple months, I'll be pounding it out there at 2:30 instead of 2:05, Rob. That's my hope.
So what do you think has a greater chance of impacting one's golf game, that trainer or, the one you wrote about the day before, David Swan, who was a basketball coach up at Northland College in Ashland? And he now has this PUR Golf Inc.
Sure.
Truth Putting Trainer. I didn't delve deep into that one because I'm not sure there's anything on the face of the earth that can help my putting game. But what did this Celtic native what has he got for me that might help?
Yeah, you know, he's invested a lot of his own money in this product, a training product for putting. And what he did with Rob was he went out and he bought every training device for putting that he could find on the market. And he studied them all and he took the best attributes of all of them and sort of put them into one, multi-use, I guess you could call it, putting trainer, where there's a lot of ways you can use it. He's got two versions of it, a big version that comes in a carry case, and then a smaller version that he said college golfers are really like because they can throw it in the golf bag or their carry bag and bring it and use it right before they tee off in a tournament. It's hard to explain, but it's got, if you can imagine any training, putting training device you've heard of, this has all their attributes sort of built into one. So, I could see, you know, I could see that, it would even help you, I think. Definitely.
Well, it's the start of the club championship this week, Gary. If I fall flat on my face, I will be definitely, linking to some of these, things that are clicking on the links in your stories. And I might have to pull the trigger on one or two of them, but we'll cross my fingers that I don't need that right now. But boy, all this stuff really looks appealing. And if you haven't read what Gary wrote from the golf show last week, do that now, because tomorrow at in the mid-afternoon, late afternoon, you'll read the top 10 things that Gary saw at the PGA merchandise show. And every single one should be on all of our lists. Gary, I can't wait to read it. And I'll let you get busy on that, and we'll talk some more golf again next week.
Okay, Rob. Thanks a lot.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, and we are presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. That's right. Our new partners in Wisconsin.Golf. We are now under the umbrella of the WSGA. We've got a lot of exciting content and coverage coming in 2024. If you'd like to be involved as a partner, advertiser, or sponsor of content here on Wisconsin.Golf, we encourage you to reach out to Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSGA. Drop him an email at rob@wsga.org. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.